Welcome to Realm Sports Podcasting. This is Tony Rice alongside the machine, Jason McKenna, and the voice of the Saints, Graham Griffin. Now, I tell you what, I'm so excited for this. I've been looking forward to it for a long time because we've invited our listeners to get involved. Remember, it's always your show. Get involved with us. And they've given us the topic for debate. We gave them a choice. Democracy rules. And through the power of the people who have been engaging with us, the topic for today's debate is our all-time favourite England 11, our favourite England football team, our fantasy England football team, if you would. And I'm really enthused to go through this with you two scholars of the beautiful game. But just before we kick off, again, it is all about that engagement. Again, it's your show. Keep involved. Want to hear from you. Jason, I know it's been crazy across social media. Give us a few choice top lines and thoughts from people out there across all modes of social media.
Yes, so of course, as always, we invite people. It's your show as much as it is ours. And you can get in touch still. You can argue with us after this has come out as well. So that's at Verulam Sport, our Twitter handle, or you can email us sport@radioverulam.com. But in terms of people's messages, boy, we've been inundated. I think people have missed the show as well, which we have as well. But Michael has sent in a message saying, so he's emailed in and said, Peter Shilton has to be in the team because he kept out Ray Clements. That's how good he was. I think that's a very fair shout there. John from St. Albans has said, the whole 1966 defence can't do any better than that. World Cup winners, but also this win-back business does not work. Then Nick from London Colney has listed off quite a few, but I'll just go through the top ones. So Alan Ball, Beckham, Letitier and Gazza was his favourite of all time. And then we've got David who said, Jimmy Greaves, goal ratio was amazing, no questions asked. I think there's some really good mentions in there and we shall see if any of them make them into our teams, Tony.
Spoiler alert, a few of those make mine. But got to tell you, what made me whistle almost there was Letice. Doesn't make mine. A true maverick and a great doing his business at the Saints down at the Dell, not our Saints in St. Albans. But a maverick in this country is rarely well applied and managed. I think that may well be a debate for another date. But yeah, I like the shout there from Letice. On that bombshell, without a further ado, I'm going to throw it across to the voice now of our Saints to give us, first of all, your formation from your Fantasy 11, and then the men keeping it safe at the back, the man in the sticks, and your defence, please.
Yes, thank you, Tony. And that was a great list that Jason's just reeled off there. So very knowledgeable community we've got in St. Albans. So I'm going to start with my goalkeeper. And unfortunately, it's not going to be Shilton. I'm going to go with David Seaman. He's had 75 caps. He had his debut in 1988 against Saudi Arabia. And obviously, we know what happened to him in the 2002 World Cup. But he had a good 14-year tenure in there. And I actually feel that from the mid-90s onwards, he was very, very strong. And I just felt he had a presence. He calm, very quite calming persona. So for me, going for number one, it's got to be David Seaman. And it's just a shame he couldn't have continued into the noughties, because in particular 2006, we could have done something interesting. And also, he did actually, I think he still played till he was 40, didn't he? 40 or 41.
He certainly was. He was still turning up at Man City. Euro 96 team of the tournament. That's when football almost came home. David Seaman obviously did the job there. Great shout. Bing is now onto your back, your back four. I believe you're going with the classic English 4-4-2. Is that correct?
Yes. So I've decided to go with 4-4-2 purely because the majority of the players that we're talking about have actually played in that system. And actually, traditionally, that's always been the formation for England from many a year. So I thought it was just easier to stick with that 4-4-2. And when I looked at the players, I thought, yeah, that will work. So I'm going to go with the two central defenders first and foremost. I'm going to go with Rio Ferdinand. I just love the guy from a point of view of he can play football, but he can do the nasty stuff for the game. He can head, he can kick, he can get in some tough tackles. But his positional play is really, really good, and his intelligence from the game. And he was part of that timeline where West Ham were just breeding so many top players, including the likes of Frank Lampard. So he makes it for me. He's had 81 caps and 3 goals. debut against Cameroon in 1997. And the second one, which might surprise a few, is Des Walker for me. Now, Des Walker, he had 59 caps.
Just quickly, Graham, I hate to cut you short.
But go on.
My sneaky suspicion is here. You can take the terrier out of Huddersfield, but you can't take the Huddersfield out of the terriers, Graham. He was a Huddersfield lad, wasn't he? Or at least a player.
Des Walker, I'm not sure, actually. He might have stuck to me on
Desi
that
Walker
one.
Was a mighty Forest man, wasn't he, actually? Begging your pardon.
That's what I mean, yeah. I think he started off at Forest, didn't he? But he had a five-year tenure with England, but I thought he was really good in 1990. Mm. And he was a bit like a quiet man, wasn't he? A bit like Chris White, if you remember at that time, playing for Leeds. So I just like how he went around with his business, not in the limelight, but just did the basics very, very well. And it's a bit like, you know, referees had a good game when you don't hear much about him. That was exactly like that with Des Walker. So they were my two central...
Gary Lineker actually referred to him as the toughest person opponent he ever had in terms of his man-marking ability. And right. I'll tell you what, there's no shortage of pace in your two centre defenders there, is there?
Well, that's the other thing. Speed of thought and speed of action as well, I quite like. And quite nimble for the size of them. And yeah, I think they're quite solid, read the game well. And I would have loved to have seen the two of them play together, because I think they would have complemented each other very, very well. But moving on to the fullbacks, so Gary Neville. I did think of Kieran Trippier here of late as well, because I think he's been quite an interesting couple of years for England. But I went with Gary Neville in the end. 85 caps, just missed the consistency. Very agile, very, very disciplined. Quite fast, actually. And his crossing ability is pretty incredible when he joins up with... or used to join up with attack. So I was quite impressed with him.
And completing your defence?
And then finally, the left back, which is your sort of Huddersfield reference, Tony. And I'm going to go for that World Cup winner, which I think one of the listeners alluded to following Jason's point earlier, in Mr. Ray Wilson.
Now, the oldest player on that, it's England 11 in that halcyon day, never to be forgotten.
Yes, he debuted against Scotland in 1960 and he final game against the Soviet Union in 1968. But he was a World Cup winner and he was ever present at that left-back position. And for me, yes, OK, he's a Derbyshire lad, but he played about 260 games for Huddersfield Town. He had quite a successful career at Everton as well. And I actually feel that, you know, he ended his career at Huddersfield and became a local, if you like, a local celebrity. So having the chance to see his family around in that area as well, I just thought, well, I had to go for him for my left back.
Absolutely. And there may well be another ex-Terrier in your 11. And this is the beauty of these things. It's our choices, and I'm sure you've got yours. It's been great to hear from you all across social media. Going across now to the machine. First and foremost, how are you configuring your fantasy England 11?
Yeah, so I've kind of gone with the more modern start. I've gone with the more modern style, so kind of embracing the Pep, but in many ways also it harks back to Cruyff, Rinus Michels and Ajax. So really I shouldn't say it's too modern, but it has been updated, and that's the kind of belief that I'm going with. So I'm going with the 4-3-3, two inside forwards, and I think it's going to be fun, and I might pick from the Cruyff playbook, the Guardiola playbook, but also the Van Gaal for that defensive steeliness, because I think all three have their merits. And in terms of it, I think it will transition to a back three as we move up the field. But overall, I think it should be the ultimate mix of total football pressing and true team play. That's what I'm going for. And from my stats perspective, I would say that that's the best stuff.
It's a worthy philosophy. Just a quick general point on formations. For me, I think they largely restrict. I think they serve a purpose in terms of maybe great for a TV audience view. But the beautiful thing about the philosophy embodied there is that it's about spatial awareness and interaction and making the ball work for you and against the opponent. I think all too often, personal opinion, England have been too rigid in their need to kind of almost square peg round hole players into a formation focused philosophy of football. So yeah, again, that's just my tuppence. I'd love your take on it. But Jason, maraud on and give us what is your back element.
Yeah, I love your point.
Nuanced
there.
11.
Yeah, I love your point there, Tony, as well. I think my focus is on play rather than kind of set ideology. Now, my back line, I'm going along with Graham here, David Seaman, safe hand Seaman, between the sticks. And I just, from an Arsenal fan's perspective, but also from the England point of view, he was so good between the sticks. And my favourite memory of him was the 2003 FA Cup final, which was in the noughties, and that amazing goal line save he made against Southampton. So for me, his safe hands are what England probably need right now as well. But moving it up...
Nobody, I think, would quibble or doubt that he deserves certainly being in contention. Doesn't make mine, but I know, again, I'm sure that will resonate with a lot of people. But moving on, who is up for you next?
So I've also chosen Rio for his brilliant ball-playing skills, and I think he was probably the first continental defender to play in England, which ironically, he's English. Really funny that.
I tell you what, I would suggest, and he doesn't make our team, or anybody's actually, but again, it was a great shout from one of the early Twitterers, that Mr. Bobby Moore would perhaps argue that he was the British archetype of this particular marriage of ball playing and defensive steel. But, you know, there we go.
Well, that's probably a bit before my time, to be fair. So maybe you can kind of see that with my selection as well, with the kind of style that I'm going for. But married next to him is Sol Campbell. I think the yin and yang to Rio Ferdinand there. I think with Sol Campbell's lack of ball playing skills, he makes up for it with his kind of speed and his ability to tackle and read the game. He's probably the more defensive defender, and Rio is the more progressive one. Then on the left, I think it has to be Ashley Cole. I think for me, the best ever left back that we've seen England produce, maybe the Premier League has ever seen, and maybe the world has seen. And then on the right, I think this one will stir a lot of discussion up with everybody here on the podcast, but also maybe in the community. I've gone with the young Trent Alexander-Arnold, maybe somebody that a lot of people will say hasn't played enough to produce things.
But just nine caps, very early.
Yes, but for me, in terms of his data, I'll throw it out here, only Cesc Fabregas and Wayne Rooney have reached 25 Premier League assists at a younger age, and they're both playing further up the field. I think that says it all for me.
It's a fascinating stat, but again, I would argue far too early in a career to extrapolate and thus put in an all-time 11. However, based on potential, I can't fault you. And again, here's the thing. This is the beauty of it. It's our own individual choices. And I tell you what, in terms of potential and that wonderful stat that you brought to the table, there's no doubting his calibre and his potential and his talent itself. Again, for me, personally speaking, an all-time 11 requires a body of work that's extended or true moments of absolute majesty. I don't think presently Trent ticks either of those boxes, but I'll tell you what, again, he is certainly one for the future, one to keep an eye on. And when it's all said and done, perhaps even I, when it is at that moment, would acknowledge he has earned the right to an England 11. And at the end of the day, it could prove to be the case, Jason, that you are a bit of a prophet and prescient in your, in your analysis. So I do appreciate the shout.
Yes, well, just for me as well, I would say, young man, very short career, but he's already got Champions League, potentially a Premier League under his belt as well, which some players don't even win at all in their careers. So I will just put that out there. But Tony, let's go on to your team. I'm really excited for this, Mr.
Yes,
T.
Yes, come on, Tony.
Right, okay, gentlemen. Well, I am going with what... as close approximation to Terry Venables' Christmas tree formation as I could possibly get. Incidentally, quick note on Terry Venables. This is not the place to debate managers. But I tell you what, I know he courted controversy, but he was brilliant at the helm for England. Truly innovative and seemed to find that human quality to really get the best out of players too. For me, an absolute legend, irrespective of all the hearsay and what may be. But yeah, I'm going basically with four at the back and then just sitting in front in a quasi sweeper position is a midfielder. Then I'm having three other midfielders. Again, my focus here, I put them, you know, one in the middle, one left and one right. But my attitude to all football is that they are nominal positions, with the attitude that this is a team ethos based on energy, commitment and lots of motion, both with and without the ball. Then I have one man just off the front with Mr. Prolific doing his thing in front of goal. So essentially it is a 4-1-3-1-1 lined up with players committed to interchanging in, if you could visualize it, something a close approximation to El Tel's Christmas tree. Okay. Now, to break that down a touch, again, love the shout to kick us off today, the Shilton one, and he is my number one in the sticks. 125 caps, remains an all-time English record. Here's another impressive stat, 1,390 games, competitive games in his career, which, again, is a world best. Utterly phenomenal record there. Of course, in his career, picked up trophies with Forest, started off at the Foxes, Leicester, won European Cups. His longevity and his ability to also see off the likes of Benetti, the cat, originally usurped another great who was surely got to be in contention for the man in the sticks. I'm talking about Banks. So what can I tell you? Shilton is my man in the sticks. I'm mirroring yourself here, Graham, with my right-back choice, going with Gary Neville. As you say, nice. 85 caps, 20 trophies in his very impressive career. And I love this one. In 96, he played alongside his brother Phil, which he did on numerous occasions. And that year, Man U won the FA Cup, and they became the first set of brothers since the Herons back in 1877 to play for England and be a World Cup winner. You know, again, a great career, as you said, Graham. Latterly, when El David, I'm talking about Mr. Beckham, came to the preeminence, I think Gary kind of almost deferred to him. But if you think back to his early career, and particularly that Euro 96 period, his crossing ability, as you yourself broke down for us, was supreme, of the highest order. Gary Neville gets my nod.
Again, absolutely. Just to quickly say on that, Tony, you're right. And I was watching Euro 96 replays on ITV Hub, and you look back and you see how young he was. I couldn't believe it. And he wasn't technically as good as Phil, but he had everything else. And let's not forget, he started out as a central defender, didn't he?
Again, very, very versatile, very, very talented man. He gets the nod for me. I'm also sharing a nod and a wink with the Machines left-back decision. I've got my man Ashley Cole in there. I mean, you just can't quibble with it. Jason, I tell you what, I actually quite liked the way you laid it down as certainly an Arsenal legend. He's definitely an England all-time great. And it is not hyperbolic to at least put him in contention for the best all-time in that position. 107 caps. You know, what a stellar career. The only player, I think, at least the only Englishman, to win the double with two different teams. Ashley Cole, take a bow, sir. You're an absolute legend. You make my team. Going to go also mirroring the Machine with one of my selections, and also mirroring Graham with my other one. I've got Sol Campbell partnering Des Walker. Again, Des Walker, of course, the Nottingham Forest man, not the Terrier. But again, two very lightning quick defenders. Love the fact that Sol Campbell made a Team of the Year 2002 World Cup and also a Team of the Year or Team of the Tournament Euro 2004, and is the only player to play in six consecutive major tournaments for England. And Des Walker, like I say, the great Gary Lineker, who I think we might be mentioning that name again in a matter of moments. Referred to as one of the toughest people that he's ever faced in his career. So that is my, as it were, back four. Shilton goal, Gary Neville, Ashley Cole, and then the centre-back partnership of Sol Campbell and Des Walker. So now not walking, but marching ever on, going back to you, Graham, for your, in your configuration, the classic 4-4-2. Who's your four men across the middle of the park?
So this was difficult, Tony, and I've actually created a squad. So I've got, I ended up picking out eight midfield players, as you say, two central midfielders and a left winger and a right winger. And I've whittled that down to the following. So for midfield left, which he could also play right, Steve McManaman. Mm. That Liverpool lad, what a talent. Doesn't look like a footballer in some respects, but he just graces the pitch. And he had 37 caps, which I think quite low considering his talent. He scored three goals, debuted 1994, ended in 2001 against Greece. But this guy could just put the fear in defenders.
Yeah.
And the ball would just stick to his foot, but he could run at pace and he looked like he was just jogging. But actually, when you see him in person, he's quite quick. I just wished other coaches could have got the best out of him, and they didn't, bar Eltel Yeoman, who I think he did probably get something out of him in 1996. But what a wonderful player. Went on with a brilliant career.
What I also really appreciate about Steve McManaman is that what he did at Real Madrid is phenomenal. He will always be etched in history with that wonderful goal, I think, against Valencia in the Champions League final, where amongst a galaxy of Galacticos, he was ultimately, on that night, the star. So, again, on his day, no question about it, Steve McManaman is an absolute icon, an interesting shout. Moving on.
Yeah, and at that time as well, don't forget, wingers used to go left and right, which we've not seen much of, albeit now and again it happens with certain teams. So I'm going to move to the other flank, hence why I put McManaman left. I'm going to go right. This was probably the only position that I didn't have to debate much, and that's the mighty David Beckham. And as obviously captaining that goal against Greece in 2001 always sticks in my mind. 115 caps, 17 goals, debut against Moldova in September 96, went on to October 2009. So a great career, bit of a stalwart. And what a career he had with England, where he was the devil and the god, if you like.
Yes,
in particular. Yeah, 98, you know, everybody hated him back in the UK. You know, he was in a really bad place. And then obviously to turn that round a few years later and score that penalty against Argentina in 2002 for us to progress in the World Cup. So for me, what a stalwart. And I just loved how he always put everything into every England game.
Yeah.
And if we had every England player doing that over the years, we would have been a lot more successful. So that's my right-sided midfielder. Moving on to probably the most talented individual that never really won everything, which potentially was probably the best English player, in my opinion, that came out off these shores, and that's Mr. Paul Gascoigne. Mm-hmm. Midfielder, 57 caps, more than I thought, considering his injuries. 10 goals, 1988, Denmark was his debut, 1998, finished against Belgium.
He scored on his debut, didn't he?
I'm not sure on that one, Tony. Your memory's probably better than mine on that one. But what I liked about him was that, you know, 1990 said it all, but 1996 again, when I look back watching at him, he just controlled the game. But even the problem was at the time, media was so obsessed by his antics and his personality that we forgot to look at his talent of being a footballer and how he led indirectly without being a traditional form of disciplined leader. He was a leader in his game, you know, and I just thought when he sparked and that goal in 96 against Scotland always sticks with me.
Absolutely.
And just how he drove that and players around him just got an extra urge to get the ball to him. And I just thought England were phenomenal when he was on his day. So Paul Gascoigne, central midfield. And then the final other central midfielder for me, bit of a utility man, Trevor Cherry. Now this
I've got
guy
a feeling
is,
that might be another Terrier shout.
He certainly is. And he's a Huddersfield lad through and through, which is great to see. He had 27 caps for England. Now he was a bit of a utility player, so he could play in any position in defence. That's why I've stuck him in there. Because he could drop deep, he could attack, he could sit in central midfield as well, bit of a ball player. And actually, he came out of Don Revie's Leeds United team, early 70s, as one of the top players there as well. So great tradition, originally Welsh or Welsh descent. And he started for England in 76, the year I was born, the phenomenal year, right through to 1980, where he finished against Spain. So I just feel that a combination between he being disciplined, if you like, being able to be a utility player, mix his game up. Mm-hmm. Gazza can be that attacking player. Manamam just threatening down the left, and Beckham with them wonderful dead ball situations and that emotional intelligence. So that's my four.
Got to tell you, it's a heady cocktail that you've got there. Just quickly coming back to Trevor Cherry, I guess maybe the only blemish on that is that he was the first England player ever to be red carded in a friendly match against Argentina in the late 70s. So he's always got that little footnote in England's footballing history. I'm not necessarily sure it's one to crow about, but there we go. Anyway, now flying back to the machine and break down your next tier in your personal, very fluid team.
Yeah, so again, I've kind of picked players that fit in with my identity because it's the football that I enjoy most watching. But also, genuinely, I feel some of these players are sometimes underlooked or undervalued in the history of English football. And the big, mm-hmm. big one, and he went almost straight into my team apart from one of my other midfielders, was Michael Carrick. Now, only 34 caps to his name, which I think is criminal. Absolutely criminal, because again, similar to Ferdinand, he is the continental midfielder that Ferguson introduced to the Premier League. He was absolutely amazing, and he was more like Busquets than Makalele in terms of defensive midfielder. He was so skillful, so amazing, but a really good reader of the game as well. He wasn't the most physical, and he wasn't the speediest, but that's where he was so clever, because he just really made and broke up play so, so well. And my biggest point with him is the fact that Pep Guardiola said he was the only player in that 2011 Champions League final that would make it into his magnificent Barcelona team.
Check it out. He and Wayne Rooney are the only England players to win this amazing list of trophies. The Premier League, the FA Cup, the Champions League, the League Cup and the Europa League. The only two players throughout all of English history. And I tell you what, Jason, it's a very interesting choice. And again, I think you made a very powerful case for the inclusion of Michael Carrick into an all-time England 11.
Just to say quickly on Michael Carrick, I totally agree, Jace, great choice. Just to quickly say that actually he was very unlucky at the time because of the Lampard, the Gerrard combination. So he was very, very unlucky to have them two players in front of him.
I would also add to that, again, that is a reflection of this attitude to system formation as opposed to kind of a more fluid approach to things. But there we go. Anyway, Jason, moving on. Who's up next?
Yeah, so kind of partnering him in a box-to-box midfielder role is Sir Bobby Charlton himself. And he's somebody that, you know, that there really needs no explanation of how magnificent he was. 49 goals for England in 106 appearances. And he was obviously the previous record holder. But the reason why I selected him was not just because of his attacking prowess, which is clearly there with the number of goals he scored, but also he is the kind of true box-to-box midfielder because of his fantastic work in that 66 final where he held out Franz Beckenbauer, mocked him out of the game and showed his defensive nous. And then again in the 1970 World Cup, where again he was given the job of marking out Beckenbauer. But then when he was taken off the pitch, you know, England were 2-1 up and they thought, oh, we'll save him for the rest of the tournament. Then all of a sudden, the three lines collapsed defensively. So I think that kind of shows you what an important player he was.
And then check this one out. He is one of only four Brits all time and only two Englishmen to win the Ballon d'Or, which he did in that halcyon year 1966. Again, not that he needs any more kind of credentials, but that, again, for me, speaks volumes.
Yeah, he's just amazing. And I think he's one of like the only earlier players that I'd put in my side because I think he is in the shape of a modern box-to-box midfielder. I think he would actually fit in with the modern game, which some of these other players from yesteryear, I'm not sure if they would. But the final one...
Massively moot point, by the way. But again, we'll have that one for another day. Moving on.
Yes, it might be another one for another day. But in terms of the one... This is the player that had to make it into my starting 11. He was the player that was first on my list. Graham has already mentioned him. It is Gazza, Paul Gascoigne. For me, the greatest talent English football has produced. He was brilliant. He could open up a team. And I did have the debate with him and Letiz, which is quite an interesting one, because I think they're both really, really good creative midfielders. But I just love that maverick element of Gascoigne, which I've allowed for one of those players in my team. Whereas Letiz, for me, maybe, I don't want to insult him, but a bit boring in comparison into Gazza, where Gazza would dare to dream and do things that Letiz would probably hold back on, whereas Gazza had the kahunas, as Troy Deeney would say, to do it. So that's my midfield three there, Tony. Any ideas on that, or shall we listen to yours?
I think you've just made some really fascinating points there, Jason, honestly. I'm still fascinated by Michael Carrick's selection. Cannot fault Charlton playing there, although I've got him in a slightly different position. But you're dead right. He did have that kind of ability to manoeuvre himself around all over the pitch, where finding the space where he could be most influential. I think that you've got a wonderful cocktail of players in that mix. And my personal midfield... Again, I have, first of all, almost an anchor just sitting in front of my back four, and that is the governor, Paul Ince. Interestingly enough, I wanted to make this reference when you were analysing Carrick so wonderfully, Jason. And again, it's actually something Graham yourself mentioned earlier in this very podcast. How amazing is the feeder system of West Ham? If you consider the amount of world-class players that originated there, my goodness me, if there was a way that they could retain players, we talk about dynasty, my word, the Hammers would have been smashing it through. But Paul Ince, the governor, sits there in the middle, just in front of the defence. And you know what, again, everybody, I think, has that sort of Terry Butcher memory, and Ince replicated it. And that, for me, in an image, talking about against Italy with blood gushing, kind of embodies the character of the man, a true warrior in every sense of the word. Paul Ince is keeping my back four nice and secure. Then right in the middle of my next kind of three, I have the man, the legend, the only man who makes it to all three of our teams. And that, of course, is Paul Gascoigne. Gentlemen, you've both broken it down. 57 caps. Again, we can't help but smile when we hear the name Paul Gascoigne, because he was an entertainer. I will advocate the devil and say that perhaps he was a bit of an unfulfilled talent, but that talent was so supreme that when it bubbled over, he was declaring himself as the greatest individual talent this country's ever produced. I truly maintain that. And, you know, What a career. And I like the renaissance, because the maybe the downward curve of Gazza was that injury he suffered playing for Tottenham in 91 against Nottingham Forest. Moved, of course, to Lazio, where he's fondly remembered for a great goal against Roma, but never quite achieved the heights. But then that Euro 96 kind of recovery, renaissance, where, again, that awesome goal you mentioned against Scotland. And not just that, he was so imaginative in that tournament. And Gazza, again, he is the only common denominator in all of our three England 11s. I'm also echoing Graham Griffin with my man David Beckham on the right. I think maybe because of all the personality that is associated with David Beckham, it's all too easy to forget just how rather good he was at what he did. Some footballers, maybe a Gazza and certainly a Messi, for instance, are what you might refer to as artists. I mean no disrespect here, because for me, David Beckham is or was a master craftsman. His gifted right boot, which he worked at tirelessly after training, was honed to perfection. And with that, he was just the kind of guy that any world-class striker would want in their team. He is not necessarily going to beat a man, although I remember, I think against Romania, where he performed a little wonder bestie dribble maneuver that he then tried to replicate for the rest of the game. But again, for me, David Beckham gets a nod. And then I'm having it on the other side, but again, mind the view that this is all very interchangeable, is Steven Gerrard. Anybody who has an FA Cup named after him, a la Stanley Matthews, is worthy of a place in any England 11. Again, there were, I think there was always this problem, wasn't there? That one you've alluded to with the, how can we get Gerrard and Lampard to live and work together? Why do we never get the best of Scholes? Another question, a name who is conspicuous by his absence from all of our teams, I would say. But Steven Gerrard, my goodness me, what a career, what a talent. 114 England caps and gets the nod, completing my midfield. So back now to GG with your two up front.
Yes, so I'm going to go to finalise my two striking teams. Again, I had four here I wanted to go with, but unfortunately that won't fit in. So that would be my squad. However, the two I've gone for is the mighty Gary Lineker. You just can't get away from Mr. Nice Guy, can you? He's he scored 48 times in 80 appearances. And although it's not the best, it's still very, very impressive considering in his time he missed out on another tournament in 1992 when we didn't get to the Euros. Or he could have potentially got into 94. He was playing in Japan at that point. So he didn't really get all the opportunities. So for me, he started in 1984 against Scotland, finished 92 against Sweden. That was the best time for England. But for me, I just thought he was really intelligent. I thought he over-maximised the skill sets he had. So he wasn't the strongest of holding up type of striker, but he did it, and he did it effectively. He wasn't the best in speed turning off his shoulder, but he did it effectively. And could he take responsibility in crucial moments and score penalties? Well, my God, he could. And I think back to 86 in the World Cup against Poland, he scored that hat-trick, you know, and he had an injury as well, and you won't be allowed to do that these days, but he scored a hat-trick and saved England. And then in 1990, them two penalties against Cameroon in the quarterfinal, incredible pressure on the guy. But he stood up even in the penalty shootout against Germany. He stood up every time and he consistently got the ball in the back of the net. So I just think he was slightly underrated under a lot of pressure by media in the 80s, early 90s. But what a player. Loved watching him and actually really enjoy his commentary now on BBC. So as a number one striker for England, it's got to be him. Second to that, I've gone for Teddy Sheringham. Now, I've gone for Teddy because he's been around the game. He's played at all levels, from non-league all the way through to the top. And again, another player I think was underrated for the workload he did. So he was more successful with Shearer, and obviously McLaren at the time was working with them from a coaching perspective. And he always used to teach them the clock system. So if Shearer was at 12 o'clock, then Teddy Sheringham would be at 6 o'clock and vice versa. And that's why their partnership was very successful. But although he could score a header, he could score from, you know, positional play, volleys, tap-ins, everything, he actually held back quite a lot. And he only got 11 goals out of 51 appearances for England, starting in 93, ending in 2002. So he was more a link player. But for his size, you'd expect a number 10 to be a lot smaller, like your Messi. But I think he just had all round. And again, his fitness was phenomenal all the way up to his late 30s he was playing. So for me, I had to go with him. I just thought he was a bit creative as a striker. And he actually helped out a lot more strike partners than they would probably like to give him credit for.
A very cerebral choice there from a very talented person. I like your breakdown too. Very quickly, can you give us just maybe the names of those other two that you would have loved to have found space for up front?
Curiosity, Tony. Yes, and I went with, to replace Teddy, it would be Ian Wright, and to replace Gary, it would be Emil Heskey.
Ooh. Oh, interesting stuff.
I like that, yeah.
Two interesting shouts there. And I think the machine obviously can get on board with Ian Wright. What a player. Okay, indeed. It's now right on and right back to Jason with the completing your 11.
Yeah, I like the shout there of Heskey as well. I think he's an underrated kind of assister of the game as well there. But Graham, you know, you've assisted us here and I'm going to continue the work. So John Barnes is one of my inside forwards, so he's deployed on the right so he can cut in with his left. And he was not a hugely prolific goal scorer, but he was more so with Liverpool, and I'm kind of looking at him there.
Watford's second all-time goal scorer there, actually. Watford all-time history. But John Barnes is number two behind, of course, another England man, Luther Blissett.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is for England, he wasn't the most prolific, but he had his better form at club level, which a lot of people have argued about. Was he deployed correctly for England? And also, was he given enough of a chance? And with both of those, I would argue that probably not. I don't think a lot of managers kind of utilise Barnes' great playing ability. Just in terms of him as well, I think there's a really funny anecdote. And Barnes himself stated that he didn't even know if he should have been allowed to play for England. He might have actually he might have played illegally for England because he hadn't had a passport when he had his first debut. I think that is so brilliant. And
that could have been a jock, right?
Yeah. He said if Scotland had come to him first, he would have played for Scotland. But because England had approached him first, his loyalty was there, which shows a great character as well. You know, because England had offered him, he was sticking with the Three Lions. And my goodness, thank goodness he made that decision, because he's a great player and also contributed to my favourite ever England song with the Barnes rap.
Yes, indeed.
World in motion.
You've got it running through my mind as we speak. Well, lovely work there. And then you have two more to complete your England 11, Jason.
Yes. Now, the next one, I think, again, might be along the Trent Alexander route. I think some people may say that I'm going prematurely here, but Raheem Sterling with 56 caps for England, 12 goals. Now, my argument here is that last season he was arguably the best player in the Premier League, arguably the best player in the world. Mm-hmm. But again, thinking back to my ideology, he is the person that has grown most under Guardiola. He is kind of Man City at times. I think he is absolutely amazing, and he's got that great footballing brain, and so much so he can play anywhere across the front line, again adding to that fluidity. So for me, Raheem,
what's fascinating, I think, about that is, again, if you look at the ratio, 12 goals in 56 games, it doesn't look exactly glistening. But he went 27 games without so much as a goal. And as you rightly say, Jason, I think you've analysed it absolutely on the money. Under Pep, or maybe just natural maturity, who knows, but certainly I would suggest a combination of both. He's come on leaps and bounds, and his eye for goal now is getting ever more clinical. And I tell you what's more, I think much in the same vein as Alexander Armstrong, the best is still to come from Raheem, and that's awesome from an England fan's perspective.
Yeah, and still only very young as well, 25, so we could see many more years of the brilliant Raheem. But somebody that we have seen all the years of, and he was great from start to finish, I'm going with Gigi's pick of Big G, Gary Lineker, 80 England caps, 48 goals. And the reason why I'm picking him is because of his fantastic footballing brain. Kind of everything what Graham has said, you know, he wasn't the most fast or strong or any of those assets, but he was so clever to utilise his skills. But also, I have to say, he played under Cruyff. He knows that Barca ideology that I'm trying to get out of the team here. And I think he's selfless enough as well to be in my England side. And at times, I would even dare to deploy him as a false nine, kind of because of his clever runs. And I will give an honourable mention to Frank Lampard there, because he was also in contention for me to be deployed as a false nine. I think it's such a wonderful kind of way to play football with making the defenders guess. And I think Gary or Lampard would do a fantastic job at doing that. But Tony, anything that you want to say on that, or do you want to give us your last few?
Just super quickly on that, Gary Lineker is only the only person all time to be top scorer at three different clubs. So again, shows the intelligence to mould a game to different teams' needs and different styles. I think that's a great shout. Wonderful player, no questions asked.
And I think he got Golden Boot in 86, didn't he?
Would be guessing, so I'm gonna say most probably, but I would have to inquire online about that.
He was the last.
Yeah, certainly a superstar, there's no questions. Anyway, my two superstars up front, and I'll put him just off the top. I've got that one behind, one up front formation in that Christmas tree style. I've gone forgive me there, Bobby Charlton. As I say, one of only two Englishmen all time to win the Ballon d'Or, a World Cup winner. Jason, I love the way you broke down Bobby Charlton as well, in the sense that, again, England's second top goal scorer, and there's no question about him as a potent force in front of goal and scorer of great goals as well as a great goal scorer. But that selfless quality or selflessness quality is phenomenal in him. As you say, the ability to almost sacrifice his own ego for the needs of a team, as he certainly did in that World Cup final. Just a great man as well. Does got lots of stuff for charity, and is an all-time legend at Man United too. And then I'm completing the lineup with Jimmy Greaves, and then coming back 360. That was an early shout from one of our listeners, and as always, encouraging you to get involved. There's going to be more exciting debates like this, and it is your show every bit as much as it is ours. So engage with us at Verum Sport. Want to hear from you. Want to hear your views of our England 11s. But finishing my 11 is Jimmy Greaves. Fourth all-time top scorer for England. An amazing, we're talking, if you look up the word prolific in the English dictionary, you're going to do worse than see a face of Jimmy Greaves. 44 goals in 57 games. He remains Tottenham's all-time top scorer. I mean, just did it. And so unlucky, because, of course, he didn't actually get a World Cup medal at the time, despite being the what would have been the first name on the team sheet. Obviously picked up an injury, and I believe that it was somewhat aggressive by you know, one of the opponents, I want to say the Argentine. Took him out. He was actually recovered, fit enough to play in the final, but at that point, Hurst was doing the business, and Ramsey didn't want to change a winning 11, and I can't begrudge him that, meaning that Greaves missed out. And based on the time, and things have changed, it was only the starting 11 who actually claimed a medal. So Greaves, he didn't actually get a medal. He was, I won't say posthumously, because I think that would be laying it on a bit thick, you know, and, unless something's happened since I've not known. But yeah, but basically, latterly, he was actually awarded a medal by Gordon Brown. There was actually a public campaign for this. Again, a reflection of the genuine love that we have as a nation for Greavesy, because he makes it in his own right as that prolific striker to my England 11. But in much the same way as Gary Lineker, that actually, again, Lineker, of course, made both of your 11s, chaps. But my point in closing is that Greaves, a la Lineker, became a broadcaster par excellence. And his work with Ian St. John, Saints and Greavesy, was superb. Tongue-in-cheek, but very powerful analysis. It was almost Baddiel and Skinner before David Baddiel and Skinner were a thing. He was a magician, a great player, great man, makes and completes my England 11. So that is
just
all.
Just to quickly point in there, Tony, as well, because I think that's a brilliant shout. And who's the current England striker that has almost the exact same ratio as Jimmy Greaves, which looks like it's going to get broken? It is that man himself, Harry Kane. So
yes.
Phenomenal shout. And we could see that broken in obviously the next few England games.
Yeah, absolutely. And we, of course, a name there that's bubbling away in one for the future. So many great names don't make any of our lists, though, do they? I mean, for goodness sake, we've omitted the name when we always should remember the name, Wayne Rooney, England's all-time top goal scorer. Man U's all-time top scorer. I'm sick of the nonsense people give me about, oh, he's unfulfilled talent. Well, excuse me, gentlemen and ladies in question here. What more can a man do? Throw a man a bone, you know? So, again, Wayne Rooney could have got in there. Jason, you made a wonderful shout for Lampard. People like Kenny Sampson, the Arsenal legend, would also be worthy of being in contention. And no place for Scholes. No place for Scholes. Again, Zidane. Zinedine Zidane referred to Scholes as the best player of the generation. And, you know, I think it's fair to say well, that Frenchman knows a thing or two about the game of football. Bobby Moore as well, again, another World Cup winner. So, but I want to encourage everybody now to continue to get involved. You've heard our thoughts, but of course, this is fantasy. It's dream time. So get involved with your views. Critique and construct and keep your views coming as to what your ultimate all-time England 11 will be. And we will be back very, very soon. Coming up soon, we've got that awesome GG Ian Allison interview. It's really, really compelling. Honestly, it's great if you're just a fan of sports in general. But of course, it is a must catch if you are a Saint. That's coming up. Plus, there's going to be regular debates, and we will continue to keep you in the picture. So make sure you are with us each and every single week for more Verum Sport Podcasting.